Welcome to Season 6, Episode 19 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we break tradition and really only cover one topic. We're going to talk a little bit about how much campaign planning do we do? Again, welcome to Season 6, Episode 19 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Ben. Welcome. Ben, did we lose you?
Ben forgot to take his microphone off mute. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, that's okay. See, you know, this is what happens. I was wondering if you were asleep at the wheel. So,
no, just technically challenged.
Technically challenged. You cannot be technically challenged. That is verboten.
This is true.
So for those who didn't know, I have successfully moved locations. So this is being recorded now at the new location, which will be an interesting change. Hopefully the audio acoustics in this room won't be bad, or might be better. Who knows? Because at least this place has carpet. The last room I had no carpet. I don't know if anyone ever heard any echoes or anything, but I doubt it. I never did.
I didn't either.
So there you go. But, you know, so here we are. And we're going to try to keep this episode a little short, because we're still, you know, make sure everything's running good. But, you know, actually, me and you were just talking before the show a little bit about the move, and how, you know, I really, this sounds almost sacrilegious, if you will, but I didn't break out all my gaming stuff when I moved.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's weird, but I have a lot of gaming stuff that I just don't use, even when I'm in full swing gaming. It's just like, why do I need XYZ game? I'm not going to use it. It's like, for example, I'll use it for instance.
Yeah.
Why do I need Rollmaster? I'm playing Rollmaster. I don't plan on playing Rollmaster. And while there are some interesting pieces in Rollmaster, if I really need something from that, I will go into the box, because I actually have all my boxes labeled clearly. Go into that box and pull it out. You know, it's like, and that might go on my shelf. It might not. I'm trying to work into what do I really need on my gaming shelf.
That's right.
Hell, there's a topic sometime for us as well. But no, it's interesting, you know, because it's like right now I have, you know, obviously my Savage World stuff, because that's one of my big go-to things that I've been doing lately. You know, I do have, you know, some D&D, some Pathfinder, you know, and then just some odds and end games that, you know, some box games that I may not play, but they're
Mouse Guard.
What was it?
You have Mouse Guard.
I do have Mouse Guard, but I left that in the box.
No, I have a walk-in closet in my basement with all the games I don't play.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but it's like I have like my Gamma World, and, you know, it's like I have my copy of the old West End Games Star Wars, which has inside that box is the Star Wars RPG in them, in that box. So, you know, and weird things like a friend of mine bought me the FASA edition of Star Trek, the RPG. So it's like I got that box. You know, there's a few boxes, and it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. And it's like, you know, I do have some Traveler stuff. And, you know, eventually, as I get back into, you know, because right now I'm kind of in a little bit of a hiatus on gaming because, you know, obviously I moved and trying to figure out, you know, where I'm going to game, because this place, not going to be gaming so much.
Right.
And, I mean, that's not a criticism at all. It's just a size thing. You know, it's like I don't have the gaming table like I had at my last place. So it's, I'm not going to be inviting 12 guys over here.
So you don't play in a store?
No, I've always played at my house.
Oh, all right.
You know, I mean, or somebody else's place. I've never actually done most store based things, mostly because usually it was the time periods. Like, you know, at one point we were gaming on Thursday night. So, you know, it's like Thursday night from like 6 to, you know, 10 or 11.
Right. Stores are open. And the gaming store closes at 8:30.
Exactly. So that's that's just not going to happen. So, but yeah, so that's going well. So, and honestly, what's interesting is there's not a lot of news this week. There is a few Kickstarters, but not a lot of news.
Yeah, pretty good Kickstarters this week, I think.
Oh, yeah, I think so. But of course, the big, if there is news, the news is, of course, the Monster Manual finally officially got released today. That was in the, I got an email from, you know, the, you know, WotC publicist or whatever you want to call her.
Oh, you're on the list.
Oh yeah, I'm on the list. All right. So
all right.
That's kind of the, I don't know. No, I'm not on the list. It's just the basic. I'm pretty sure it's because I probably was signed up on the beta or something like that. I don't know how they do that at all.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I'm no longer impressed.
Yeah. Well, it's not. There's nothing to be impressed about. So, but yeah. Check. So that was kind of cool. But you know, we got some pretty good Kickstarters. My personal favorite, of course. Well, I bet you can guess.
It's not D&D 5th Edition Monster Manual, is it?
No. We're talking Kickstarters now.
Oh, it's got to be the Last Parsec, Savage Worlds.
It has to be the Last Parsec from Savage Worlds, which is kind of cool because I actually did pick up the science fiction companion when I was at Gen Con this year. So,
and I'll be honest with you. I'm thinking about backing this one for $125.
Oh, I didn't go that high, but I did back it.
Yeah, I looked at the $35 one, and that would be adequate, but I might go all the way on this one because it looks really well done.
Oh, I think so. And what's nice is that they decided that, you know, since most of the information that they wanted to, you know, it's not like a, I don't, you know, this isn't like World Wars, Weird Wars, Rome, or some of the
right.
other things. It's like a lot of the, some of that, this, these are, they got it broken up into like three different books.
Right.
You know, because a lot of the information, like the races and everything, you know, that's what they said. You know, okay, well, a lot of the race information and all that other stuff, they actually already had in the companion.
Right.
You know, so you need the core rules. You need the companion to play. The books will not be, from what I remember, I think they're looking at May. But
yeah.
I think the PDFs are going to be out by November?
Yeah, they're saying November for the PDFs and May for the physical books.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not too bad. I mean, if you just want the PDFs, it's $35 for PDFs. Plus, that includes any of their stretch goals that they've unlocked.
Right.
They do have some miniatures. They have some miniatures.
Yeah, they look good.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things where it's like, I can't justify. But they do. They look pretty good. I think you can do them, you know, and they're all in there. And of course, you know, they have some card decks as well,
mm-hmm.
specifically,
right.
You know, which is cool. But I'm not getting those because it's like I have enough card decks to, especially, you know, to use for initiative cards or whatever to choke a horse.
Oh yeah, they've got their own dice, game master screen.
I decided to back it at 100 myself.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I went up to only barely.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like I can afford a few minor things every year, so this is it.
Yeah, well, the group I play with, we've been playing Pathfinder for a long time, and I've wanted to try Savage Worlds for a while, but I'm sick to death of the Tolkien fantasy or high fantasy, whatever you want to call it, and I'm going to try and get them to back it at $35, and I'll just, you know, I'll take the hit and
yeah.
get the full
PDFs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, I mean, as many listeners will know, it's like I've kind of been looking for something science fiction-y that I can use instead of Traveler.
Yeah.
For a while. And it's like, you know, I like the Savage World setting. I have the old Slipstream setting,
yeah.
which was cool, but just not really what I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, that's more Flash Gordon-y. And don't get me wrong, I don't think I could run that game, but that'd be a fun game to play. You know, I'm a call me an old softie. I like the old Flash Gordon related stuff.
Yeah, so, it's pulpy. It's fun.
Yeah. So, hold on here a sec.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that I think that pretty much does it for that particular
yep.
thing. I don't want to beat a dead horse on that particular subject. So that's kind of cool. Let's see what else we got. If your Pathfinder happens to be your thing, there is this
Cross of Fire
Saga Adventure Path. I don't know why, but I kind of like the rhinoceros and the kilt. That's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like Kung Fu Panda with blunderbusses.
Well, actually, it's actually for the is a post-apocalyptic survival horror tabletop RPG and a five-part adventure path for the Pathfinder RPG. Man, that is a mouthful.
Yeah, so it combines apocalypse with zombies with...
mutants.
Yeah.
Which explains the rhinoceros with the...
yeah.
What looks
with
like
the forearms.
Yeah, with some sort of weird blunderbuss kind of weapon, it looks like. And a kilt. Yeah, you know, okay. You know, not my... again, not quite...
He's right. A Scottish rhino.
Yeah, Scottish rhino. There you go. That was the ticket. We mustn't forget that. He's Scottish.
You know. And zombies. And lots zombies. Of zombies.
Exactly. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying it isn't cool, but trying to force that into Pathfinder just seems wrong to me.
Yeah, it seems...
but, you know,
well,
I could be wrong. I mean, you know... everyone has their thing. Maybe this is it, you know. And then again, I get a little wacky sometimes in my preferences. So, but yeah. So it.
No, nah, it looks good. It's just it's not for me.
Yeah. Again, I'm that's where I'm at.
I mean, let's be honest. It's no The Last Parsec.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, all five PDF. Yeah, it's like $36 to get the PDFs. And
that's
then, yeah, which is five, and then you get the collected PDFs, 55 for all, and we soft cover. I'm trying to look and see. Okay, so at $65, you can get all the adventures in black and white, soft cover. If you want them in color, they're going to cost you like $90. So, again, you got to want to really have this, I guess. You know, so, but I mean, not saying that it's bad. It's just, it's clearly not my thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It seems to be, you know, very ambitious.
Yeah. I mean, the artwork at least looks good.
Yes, it does.
So there is that.
I do judge a book by its cover.
You know, I don't really do that much. Sorry. Nick, but speaking of judging a book by its cover, no, we have the, we have some, miniature supplements.
Yeah.
The right war game terrain for The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. They got about 26 days to go. They're looking for about $8,000 and money.
Yeah.
And they only got five backers. I think it's because it's like the minimum is $145.
That's a lot of money.
But you know, they are miniature set pieces, so I'm not really too surprised.
Yeah, I've never... I love minis, but I've never been into the set pieces part of it. It's rains, it's too much to store, and it's too subjective to,
I mean, as much as I have always wanted to use this stuff, kind of stuff, it's like I actually have... Well, actually, I have/had the some of the Hertz Arsmolds. And let me tell you, when I went to Gen Con and went through the miniature section, I mean, those things, that stuff was prevalent everywhere. You could pick out people's pieces that they made, and you're just like, oh, that was made with Hertz Arsmold stuff. You could just pick them out, you know, it's crazy. And there was a lot of it. I mean, for those of you who are wondering what I'm talking about, go to either the Google Plus page for RPG Circus or go to the Facebook page. There's a photo section. I didn't take a lot of photos, but most of my photos were in that section.
Right. It was cool. I walked by there too.
Oh yeah. So I mean, that stuff was just insane. So,
and they'd let you pick it up and handle it, and it was cool.
You know, but so what I've obviously, you know, my buddy actually has my molds because he's using it to build pieces to play with his kids. So I'm like, you know what? You're getting more use out of it than I've gotten out of it in the last couple of years. So you know what? You can hold on to it for a while. So especially with the move, I have no place for it.
Wow.
So, what else do we got? The Savage East campaign setting expansion.
Yeah.
I guess this is an expansion for Savage Kingdoms. Again.
Not my thing.
Not my thing. Not really. Not that it's bad. And let me see if a Savage World.
It's, very thin.
Yeah.
Very sparse.
So
my guess is they haven't developed much of it yet. But I hope they succeed.
They're only looking for about $1,200, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
You know? And they've already got raised, I don't know, about a third of that. So, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I hope they succeed.
Yeah, you know, I'm always happy to see, like, you know, to me that's a very modest goal. $1,200, that's not too bad. And if they succeed and make, I don't know, even like 30 backers happy, that's great.
That's right. That you is know? Great.
Or whatever the, you know, whatever the magic number would be to make their goal. Right now they have 11. So yeah, like 33, 34, 40, 50 guys or girls, whoever, you know, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And then we come up with the plastic minis.
Now, these are unusual because I have not seen paper. Well, I guess they're not paper. I have not seen minis like this on. It's not cardstock.
No, it's a piece of plastic, and the base is plastic. And it's basically, you know, the best. You're right. It's they call it the flat plastic miniatures.
Yeah.
It's basically like the cardboard minis, but instead of it being printed on cardboard, it's printed on a piece of transparent plastic.
It looks like they have a front and a back, though.
Yeah, they do, I think.
Oh, they do, yeah. They got it in the second set of pictures. They got the backs.
Yeah, so...
I see.
But I'm just saying, that's kind of... That's really... To me, that's kind of cool. You know, that's... I mean, they have... I mean, there's not a lot of figures in here, but... I mean, what are they asking for here?
You know, like 2 years ago, the... Joe Wetzel's company tried to do something like this, and he couldn't get it cheap enough so that for a reasonable price point. So the technology must have evolved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they actually do this or whether dealing with certain constraints that they thought of to do.
Yeah.
User submission.
I like the art, though. I like that style. It's kind of a anime type,
but not too heavily. It is, and it's not at the same time. So,
yeah, their eyes are normal size, for example, and their waists are normal size.
still, it is expensive. You know,
how much is it?
I'm looking, and I think on $75.
Oh, that's a lot of money.
$25 for. One theme pack of Flak minis. I don't know. I'd have to look and. I guess. I'm not sure what the themes are. But, you know. But still, I mean. I don't think they're too. I don't know what's in.
How many does that come with?
Yeah, I don't know how many are in a set. If that makes any sense. Okay, here we go.
Oh, here.
Okay, the pack is a proof of concept for an entire 62-piece pack. But deliver.
That's more than $1 a piece.
Well, they were talking about 62-pack of Force Relief miniatures, but all bundled together, delivered for... Where the hell is the 25? Oh, I see. Okay, actually, that is not too bad. I don't know where the hell these really pricey ones come from. But I guess they only have one pack right now. I don't know why people are. I don't, because the proof of concept one is 62 pieces and it's $25.
Oh, that's not bad.
So it's like 40 cents a mini, which isn't too bad.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah. And these are, like I say, pretty innovative.
Yeah, and so what they say is we want to create at least an additional two theme packs of 62 miniatures each. So what some of these people that are betting for all three. You know, the $75, which is all, that's for three 62 pieces, are their whole desire to produce, you know, 186 pieces.
Yeah.
But just for $25, you get, that ain't bad, actually. You know, just for the base ones. And they've actually reached their goal. They were only looking for 10 grand, and they're already up to almost 13 and a half. So that is not bad. And they're still... My God, there's still days and days to go. I think they're doing that to try to see if they can get enough money to, I guess, produce their additional. Because I'm guessing the additional sets are all part of. I think they haven't planned. It looks like they haven't planned out.
Yeah, I'm sure they get the art already.
Well, I don't think they have all the art because it's one of them. Looks like one of these pieces is like a conceptual piece. It looks like Cthulhu.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But yeah. You know, it's. Additional fit. Yeah, they're looking, you know, when they reach $20,000, they'll get the fourth pack. Yeah, I don't know. Again, you know, it looks The artwork's not bad, all things being equal. And I do like the fact that at least these would be a lot of figures that you could store pretty flatly, I guess. You know, because they're just flat pieces. They're like cardboard.
Yeah, they would store nice.
So, that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I like them.
I'm already backing something, so there went my money.
Well, yeah, I can't do both.
Yeah, exactly. That's the classic dilemma here that we have. So.
I have limited assets.
Yep. So let's see. We have also we got another Savage World license setting, Steamscapes Asia. I guess.
So it's like steampunk oriental style.
Historical Asian steampunk. The second major setting for the books for the Steamscape RPG setting. So, I guess there was a steampunk. Our Steamscape, I think, was another Kickstarter earlier in the year.
I see.
So I guess if this is your thing, I mean, you got to have this. It's not really mine. I mean, I've never been a big. I mean, I don't mind the steampunk stuff, but it's just never been my thing either.
Well, it's. Well, we've said this before, but it's kind of like magic and replacing technology. And here you're in the 1880s with high technology, but it's not high technology. I mean, I don't know. Like you say, I guess if it's your thing, it's your thing.
Yeah,
it's never appealed to me.
No, it never appealed to me either.
So, but it's popular. So
it's popular. So now we come to. This is this one actually has done pretty well. Oh no, it hasn't. Yeah. Sorry, I'm wrong. I'm looking at that. That's a decimal place, not a comma. I just mentioned it because, well, who doesn't want to name a game like this? Kicking butt
that's
and
right.
taking names.
Kicking butt and taking names.
A tabletop RPG with a twist. I don't know what the twist is.
I don't either. There's a lot of blood.
Of blood and not the art. Again, you know, I'm not judging by its cover. The artwork is kind of, well, ridiculous.
Primitive. Yeah.
Primitive. I like that. We'll go with primitive. Sometimes primitive is good.
Yeah, it's consistent. Yeah.
Especially if you're a caveman.
That's right. It's got three backers.
Yeah, you know,
still got months to go.
It still has a month to go. You know, but have you ever wanted to play one that was all about the guns? Apparently, he's a very big game with guns, so...
I guess so.
Not a big fan, but, hey, you know, I just love the name. I had to mention that.
It is a great name.
So, and of course, there is the Vampire... Finally, there's the Vampire's Codex RPG, I guess that uses a gothic noir table set in modern day.
Huh. So it's like True Blood and all those.
I was about to say, don't we already have games like
that? Yeah.
You know, yeah. Hey, you know,
tired of vampires.
You know, yeah. I mean, it has 45 days to go. They're looking for about 14 and a half, and it's about 11. Right now they have about $1,100.
Yeah.
And 19 backers. So, but they still got time.
They do. And these things tend to accelerate at the end.
Yeah, you know. It's... I've just never been a big fan of the vampire stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's like additional setting influences include the City of Lost Children, you know, mm-hmm. Dracula's Daughter, Dark City, Frank Miller's graphic novel, Sin City, The Hard Goodbye. I mean, I like this. I mean, I remember watching the City of Lost Children. You ever see that movie?
Oh, yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I mean, I love that movie. You know, and I like the old Dark City movie, too. But it's like, that's not enough influence for me. I'm not a vampire person. Never, you know, it's like, that's one of the things that, you know, I just never got into, like, Vampire the Masquerade or any of the other, what is that whole stuff? Set. I mean, people are going to kill me.
Oh, I'm not the encyclopedia of RPGs.
World of Darkness? No. Is it World of Darkness? I think it is, isn't it? Isn't that what that whole...
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. Strangely enough, I knew that. Yeah, I really...
I knew you would eventually come to it.
Oh, no, I'm not that good. But yeah, there's that. Those were the Kickstarters for the last couple of weeks. And really, the only one I'm personally excited for was, of course, The Last Parsect. And that actually came out right after our last episode. And, you know, very poignant people will note that I actually shot a link to it you know, like the day after on our Facebook page. So there you go. So that's what you miss out if you don't check the Facebook page. Every once in a while I post something that we don't talk about.
That's right. So,
but yeah, so that not a bad little roundup.
No. So that's pretty good. Well, I think we could spend a whole episode talking about Kickstarter stuff. True fun.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But instead, we're going to talk a little bit about something that, since I'm actually looking at trying to, as I kickstart my game again, I was thinking about this. And actually, there was I was reading, I don't know, it was like a few days ago, I don't remember, I didn't even bookmark it, which big idiot I was. And this guy was like, he says, you know, sometimes I make up campaign stuff that, you know, I make up campaigns that I'm just never going to use. And so he says, instead, so I just, you know, since I run a blog and I'm going to post out that information just so other people can enjoy it and possibly use it. And it was very interesting. I mean, it really wasn't a lot of information.
Yeah. But
it's like the amount of planning that he thought about, like, well, this adventure will be this. And then the next five adventures will kind of be these type of things. And it's just like he had it planned out to like adventure 30, just kind of not what the actual adventures were, but what kind of general adventures were and what kind of strange twists might happen in each adventure to make an elaborate campaign.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you know, and it's like I've never really, and I realized my, you know, many times I've never really been good at that. I don't know. So well, how much planning does one really do for a campaign, or can anything I've ever done really been called a campaign other than just fooling around? No, I'm serious, because it's like I remember reading. I take the opposite approach. I mean, you ever play a lot of Champions?
No, once.
Okay, so yeah. Well, Aaron Alston, you know who he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the supplements that he produced a long time ago for Champions was Strikeforce, which was basically a supplement based on the campaign, his homebrew campaign that he ran. And what was interesting was not necessarily that material, but the notes that he included in it, where he talked about, you know, how the campaign progressed over time, and so, you know, some of the things that they did during the game, and how, you know, it wasn't like he had a set, you know, he started off, it actually all started with a playtest, his campaign. He just generated some stuff, started out with some characters, there was a playtest, and eventually all of that just became part of the game. And it's just like, you know, it just continued on and on and on and on and on. And the weird thing is that's almost I've always played. Now, there are a few things that I haven't done like that. You know, the Solomon Kane. You know, I played the entire plot point campaign from start to finish, you know, with a group of people. And that was great, you know, because it was nice to have a definite start and a definite ending.
Yes.
You know, but I didn't have to plan that. And I mean, I guess that's the same thing with like the adventure paths. I mean, each adventure path for like Pathfinder is a campaign, and especially since they're designed to take you from like first level to like what, 16th or something like that.
Yes,
you know, 16th, 17th.
I've never gotten that high.
No, I've actually, you know, I did the Second Darkness, and I think, and I ran it, and I think we didn't even finish the third booklet of adventures, but that was tough.
Wow.
You know, and it's just at a certain point, I find a lot of that stuff just bogs down for me. Now, was it cool? Yeah, it was fun, and there were some good things in there. But it's like it really gets to get me to think. It's like, how much planning does one really do for a campaign? Or like I said, can anything I've ever done really be called a campaign? Because a lot of times I don't expect a game to last more than 5-6 adventures.
Yeah, ours are about like that.
You know. So, I mean, for yourself,
tend to fall apart when the players hit around 6th, 7th, 8th level.
Well, I'm not even talking that. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, you've game mastered, right?
Oh yeah, many times.
I mean, when you create your own campaigns, or your, you know, and I guess that's the question. It's like, you know, a setting can have multiple campaigns, but a lot of times for me, the setting and the campaign are one and the same.
Yes, I agree.
You know, that usually whatever I'm doing is for that group and that group only. I don't, you know, I don't have sacred cows, I guess. It's not like I've used this same setting in 12 different systems. Yeah, that's not me. I just don't do that. It's like usually, a lot of times I like to start fresh. I don't know why. It's like,
yeah, when I was younger and the people I played with were younger, we played a lot in the same setting.
Well, you know, you like, know? Well, I'm just saying, like, a lot of people, you would, oh, we'll play in Greyhawk, or we'll do this. You
right.
Know, the day, it's like, you know.
Forgotten Realms,
or, you know, or, what's the one for Dragonlance?
Oh, I don't remember.
Anyway, you know, you get what I'm saying, you know, like, a lot of people do that, or, you know, like, in Rollmaster, a lot of early Rollmaster people would use the, obviously, the Lord of the Rings. The Middle-Earth setting. Without actually playing the Middle-Earth adventures. I mean, I actually played adventures with a guy where the adventures were taking place way before, you know, the ring is even found. You know, it was like between when the ring was lost and the ring was found. But he actually would point out at this guy. He'd be like, yes, the ring is still there, but no one is going to be finding it there. Thank you very much. Next.
Right.
You know,
it's too much meta. Yeah.
Right. You know, but it was interesting, you know, but, you know, so that was his thing. Of course, he had a dwarf fetish, too. So there you go.
Oh, well.
Hey, you know, each their own. But no, I mean, so what was I saying?
You wanted to know how much preparation you put into a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, for you, I mean, how much prep do you really do?
So, for me, it's more about getting a setting, and our campaigns tend to be more organic. And the setting is somewhat negotiated with the players, and that we kind of decide how much magic we want and how much law we want or how much monstery, you know, stuff we want. The story kind of goes from there. So when I'm doing it, I have a story in mind, but my players are notoriously difficult to keep on a plot, and they will follow something shiny the other direction, and tend to find their own story arc. So I can give an example. We were For 18 months we were playing this campaign where we were on this island nation and it was being overrun by zombies. Shocking, I know, zombies. And
I prefer skeletons, but go ahead.
Well, undead. the story arc was supposed to be to find the source of the zombification or the undead and, you know, kill the necromancer. I mean, that was supposed to be the big bad boss battle at the end, and they never got there. The players made their peace with living in the zombie apocalypse and carved out a decent way of life where they could extort people for protection and create safe havens. And that was never the intention, but it played out that way, which was okay.
Okay.
But that's my gaming group. We, like I say, not a lot of prep for the actual campaign.
Yeah, you know, and the only, like I said, the only reason I ask is because it always seems like you hear about people, and it's just, I mean, that's always the way I've gamed. Maybe it's being a little bit more older school where, you know, basically everything was a massive dungeon delve, so the campaign was going from dungeon to dungeon to dungeon, if you will.
Right, right.
You know, not necessarily, oh, I have to do this, and oh, this is the little plot twist here, and, you know, I have to make a moral decision here. You know, that didn't really happen, you know. So I always wonder, because it's like I always feel like I cheat all my players a lot by not actually having an actual more thought out campaign. And a lot of times I guess it's because over the years I just realized that my mental energy is limited. Yeah, I know that sounds no. I mean, I know that sounds horrible. People are like, "What are you talking about?" But the truth is that I just don't feel like sometimes expending a whole bunch of mental energy on something that never gets used. I've done that. And at this point, I just, you know, even if it's a thought experiment, yeah, I might write a whole bunch of notes down, but it's not going to be elaborate. You know, and like I said, that this blog post, I mean, it really wasn't elaborate. I mean, it was just some notes. And so that was kind of cool I don't even know how much work he actually did. I think he just did it in a night, so it's whatever he did over the night. But I'm thinking to myself, I don't even know if I would even put that much effort into it. It'd be like, I might have a note in a notebook that I can go back to at a later date, you know, just to have something. But
yeah,
it seems like I don't develop a lot of stuff because to me, it's like I'll develop some cursory information and, you know, see what happens with the players, because the players always tend to muck things up.
Yeah.
As you know, so why, Well, I do a lot of work, and I'd like to hear from our listeners, see how much work they actually do for their campaign, because I'm sure there's some that, like, yeah, I spend, you know, 8 hours, 10 hours, 15 hours a week on this stuff.
So I used to feel bad about not being prepared and winging it too much, but I've gotten really good at winging it, and I would get so frustrated when the players would deviate from the planned arc and waste all of that work that it no longer I felt it was a wash. That was what I came to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so you're kind of like me. You kind of like, oh, well, I'll create some material, but I'm not going to, because I always feel like, you know, and I just wonder about that, because like I said, you know, like I played really good plot point campaigns.
Yep.
Or there are, like, the adventure pass, you know, there's a start to an end. But on the other hand, that's investment money that somebody else spent.
Right. That's right.
You know, so, and I mean, I wonder if that's why some of us tend to have started to use, you know, there are a lot of people that tend to start use a lot more pre-made material because of that.
Yeah, I think so. It's a time saver, and the material is pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those things. I think about that. It's like, you know, when I was a young kid, I had a lot more time to spend on doing those things.
Yes.
So I just stuff that I just don't have time to do today.
I still, when I'm prepping one, I still will create, you know, maybe half a dozen NPCs and have them pretty well fleshed out as to what kind of a character they are. But where they will encounter them is kind of squishy.
Squishy, and, I like that. That's
subject to opportunity.
That's almost a Doctor Whoism there. You know, time.
Yeah. And I'll do the same thing with maybe some maps and some features and stuff like that. But most of it's just wing it.
How much? I mean, how much notes do you make on your NPCs?
Oh, well, I usually do a background.
I mean, do you actually like create, like, you know, some people I know will like create complete characters for every NPC.
Oh no. No, I might add the equivalent of a Thaco type stat. More of it is the psychological profile of, you know, what type of person they are and what their background is, what their motivation might be, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I loved about Savage Worlds, you know, DNA Phil Vecchione. He was telling me one time that for a lot of his stuff, what he does is he has a, you know, because Savage Worlds, they use dice for the attributes and skills.
Right.
You know, D8, D6, whatever. And so he always has a high die and a low die for like an NPC, for the basic NPC, stuff that you don't know if you might need or might not need, or just even like some real generic stuff. Instead of actually using a full-blown sheet, he'll just have a high die and a low die. So anything that the character should be really good at uses the high die. Anything that the character should be really bad at uses the low die.
Boy, that could be a whole system.
You know. But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, and honestly, you know, there's not a lot of combinations there. It's like, you know, what is it going to be? D8, D4, D6, D, you know.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's not a lot, but, you know, still, with the way, obviously, Savage World works, that works pretty well, because just from those two dice, and if you go like, well, he should be really good at fighting, well, then you know what his parry is going to be. You know,
right.
It's not that hard to extrapolate from just that, and it's like, wow, that saves a lot of time. You could just, you know, you don't have, okay, honest, don't get me wrong, the guy doesn't have, like, edges or anything like that, but then, you know, as a game master, you can go like, well, this guy should have this edge. There you go, done. I don't have to worry about it later. You know, I'll worry about it when I get to that point. But, you know, but it's fascinating, because it's like, it's true. It's like, you don't, I mean, I guess that's why I like Savage Worlds, because what you can do is you can have a character name, you can have just a, like you said, a paragraph, and you almost don't even need to decide on the dice. You can do that on the thing. It's like, I think you should have a D8 and a D4, because the players are right around that area. You know, okay.
Yeah.
Done. You know, or these guys are really bad guards, so they're going to have like a D4 and a D6 and a D4, you know, which again, you know, that, you know, average and poor, you know, that there you go, off the run. It's like they shouldn't know how to climb. Okay, D4, that, okay, you know, it's pretty easy to do that, which is another thing I like about Savage Worlds. So yeah, no, I was just kind of curious, because it's like, I know for myself, I hate the whole complex, you know, writing, you know, trying to make a character for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, yeah, and there's shortcuts. And I think, you know, like, obviously, like, Phil's system, it works for Savage Worlds. You can kind of do that in other games. But, you know, mostly it's just, you know, a name and maybe a few things. And that's about it. And actually, and the question is like, well, how much of this, how many of these NPC types do you really need to create? I mean, one of the, because one of the sections that I remember reading a lot on, and it was just a few, it was just several pages in Rolemaster. Yeah. In Rolemaster, they had their what is it called, campaign law.
Okay.
And in there, you know, they have some notes about, you know, okay, well, you know. You know, when you create, you know, it talks about creating societies and things and NPCs and, you know, talking about, you know, like having, you know, like, okay, well, you know that you have, you know, this temple and this thing. So you need to at least make notes about, well, who are the temple people, you know, and it's just, you know, and it's like, you know, and they're just talking about a few basic notes to populate the world. And it's like, God, I just never do that.
Yeah.
You know. Or,
yeah, I don't either.
Well, it's just like Weird Wars Rome. I was actually thinking about actually running, maybe not Weird Wars Rome itself, but like a fantasy Rome. And it's like, well, how realistic do you want to get it? And I was like, because I was actually, I started reading about the actual priest system that the Romans used. Man, that was complex. I mean, it really was.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, that's not going to work for a game. You know, it's fascinating from a historical aspect, but it's like, you know, trying to get even get players to have that level of buy-in to even know that stuff, because that's stuff that you would just kind of know or would eventually know. And that's actually the other thing. It's like, how much knowledge do you think, you know, that's another thing when you make a campaign. It's like, have you ever created like a primer sheet for your campaign?
Oh, yes, many times.
You know, I mean.
Many times.
You know, and I mean, how important is that?
I think it's pretty important if you share it, because it gives the players kind of some buy-in about what to expect, and that's good. It's also a good memory jogger for you.
Well, you know, it's like I tried to do that for a Champions game, because it was like, you know, hey, you know, I wanted to create like a background of like, well, you know, the hero, there were superheroes, and then like they kind of just like disappeared. It's like, you know, well, basically they all got older and died off. And then all of a sudden now there's this whole new wave of new people with superpowers. And that was the whole concept and trying to explain that. And it's like, of course, the players never read the damn thing.
Of course not. No.
You know, so it's like, well, that was a waste of time and my energy.
Well, so I'll give you another example of players frustrating you.
We need another one. So go ahead.
Well, no, but when you buy a module or a module-like thing. Players are pretty good about sticking to the module and following the story arc. But when it's your own creation, they don't, and this is not anything that they've ever said, this is just what I've noticed. When it's your own creation, they feel no obligation to stick to the plan. And they go off the rails, you know.
It's like, okay, well, this was a, I can't deviate from the movie here, but, oh, in this case, this is more of a student production. Fuck it. I'll just...
That's right.
You know, that's funny. So, all right, well, I don't know. Is there anything else we need to discuss? I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's just a random babble in this case, but...
Yeah, it was good dialogue.
You know, I'd like to actually, you know, get some feedback from some people, knowing really how much campaign prep work... You know, I mean, do they do a lot? Do they do less? Have they ever done like what this guy did, which was, you know, it's just, you know, a couple of pages of notes, but he has like, I have the basic concept of like, well, adventure one will be an introductory adventure, introducing the characters to a certain concept. And then, you know, adventures 2 through 5 will just be kind of that adventures in this vein. And then adventure 6, there'll be this twist because I wanted to introduce them to this and then make a change.
Oh, yeah, I've never succeeded at that.
You know, but I'm just saying, you know, because that has happened, you know. It's like, you know that the beginning of the game, you know, you work for a spy agency and you know that, you know, the team is actually, you know, working for, I don't know, working for the bad guys, but they think they're working for the good guys. Well, in the early days, that's where it starts at, but, you know, eventually they start gaining clues, the fact that they're working for the wrong side and what happened, right. You know, at the end. I don't know. That's just a weird example. I would never do that because, to me, that's just too much work.
But a lot of work to be disappointed in, yeah.
A lot of work to be disappointed in. I like that. So, but yeah, no, So if anyone out there is listening, I'd love to hear it, especially in an audio comment. I don't care if it's a couple minutes long, even 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yeah, we'd love it because we got a lot of comments when I asked for advice the last time.
Yeah.
So I think you need to feel the love.
Oh, we all need to feel the love. So, but yeah, anything else?
Nah, I think that's about it.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to say, send us those audio comments via just by going to our Facebook page, our homepage, and click on the SpeakPipe application and record a audio comment, and that will send it to us. If you don't want to do that, well, you can send us an email, and we'll I'll be more than happy to butcher your email online, you know. Or, you know, you can send us a message via, you know, our RPG Circus Facebook page or our Google Plus page. And I'd be more than happy to do that. Hell, you know, also, I still have stickers, even though I've moved. I still have some stickers. I didn't actually get any from anybody, but I still have a small, you know, small set of stickers that I'm willing to get part out. So send us an email, and if you actually live outside the United States, just give me the full address to actually send it, you know, foreign post, and I'll be more than happy to send those out to you as well. And, cool. You know, we actually, I asked us for people to, if they wanted to actually come and guest host on the show. We did get a couple of replies to that. I will be getting to those replies. I just, you know, unfortunately I got them right before we started recording this episode, which is why we didn't have any additional people on this episode. I'm going to try to see if we can get one of them on the next episode.
That would be cool.
So other than that, I think we're done. And yes, this is actually a short one, people. Get over it.
That's right. Deal with it.
It's okay. You know, this we're gonna make up for the super long ones we had earlier in the year.
We're gonna average them out.
Exactly. So we'll see everyone in 2 weeks, and hopefully next week we'll have actually two topics.
Woohoo!
Next week, God, did I say next week?
You did, but you meant in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks, you know. And so, some days I do wish I could do this every week, but I would run out of steam. I think so.
Yes. Less is more.
Less is more. So, we'll see everyone in about 2 weeks. RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.